burning in my soul. Hello and welcome to a new episode of Pop Fishbowl. I am your host Ezekiel. Hey guys, how's it going? It has been a while. My last episode was August of 2016, so it's June 1st of 2017, so that's almost a year. I apologize. I really have no excuse other than life, yo. So I hope you guys have been well. I have continued to consume my my pop culture consumption. I'm really excited because Wonder Woman opens today nationwide, you know, including the States and Canada for their Thursday night preview. I was really sad because the Canadian city that I live in, the theater chain, is only offering VIP screenings tonight. So basically it's like a really plush, comfy couch kind of chair, and it costs you $10 or $20, and you can get food delivered to you. You can get like Skittles on a platter. And this is really sad because I have been waiting for a Wonder Woman movie since I was 5 years old. Wonder Woman was one of my first role models, and she was one of my first early heroes. I have admired her for a long time, and I've wanted a Wonder Woman movie. And especially I want female superhero movies. I just want more kind of female blockbusters in general, but especially female superheroes. We need that. And so there's a part of me that needs this movie to be good and needs this movie to do super, super well. And I'm almost willing to see it 5 or 10 times this weekend, even if it's not bad, just to kind of send a message to Hollywood that we get more of these movies, because that's very important. So I'm very sad. It's Thursday night that I'm recording this podcast, and I can't go and see Wonder Woman until tomorrow. I have to adult, guys. And sometimes adulting sucks, but you gotta do. So that's some news. The other news is that today Netflix canceled their kind of sci-fi series Sense8 that was created by the Wachowski siblings. I have not watched any of Sense8. I think I watched the first episode when it came out like 2 years ago, but I don't really have a recollection. It may have been a dream. I don't know. There's really no other reason that I haven't watched it other than there's just been so much TV. Like, peak TV is a problem, especially coming from Netflix, where it is just, it's, I don't know about anyone else, but I feel overwhelmed by the amount of content. I make a list of all the TV that I am either currently watching or excited about or trying to catch up to. I'm just going to read through the list of all the Netflix shows that I haven't even started to watch. So Daredevil season 1 and 2, Sense8 season 1 and 2, Marco Polo seasons 1 and 2 that has been canceled, Narcos season 1 and 2, I haven't watched that. I haven't watched Haters Back Off, which was kind of a comedy starring the Miranda Sings character from YouTube, so I haven't watched that. I have not watched The Crown. I have not watched Girl Boss. I have not watched Dear White People. I have not watched The Keepers. That's all Netflix. I've seen one episode of Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events, and I've seen one episode of 13 Reasons Why. And then later this summer is season 5 of Orange is the New Black that I'm really excited for. There's also Glow, which is the Gingy Coen series. She's the creator of Orange Is the New Black, and she did Weeds, and it's about female wrestling in the 80s. So that's just Netflix, and it's kind of insane the amount of content they're putting out. Like, I have not even watched season 3 of Kimmy Schmidt or season 3 of Grace and Frankie, and I love those shows. Both shows are my jams. They're like some of my favorite comedies currently airing, and there's just so much TV, and I feel so overwhelmed that I'm kind of scared sometimes to just start a new Netflix show, because it's just like, if I was just gonna watch Netflix shows, that's at least, what, 4 weeks of my life, maybe 5 weeks, maybe a month, just catching up on the Netflix shows that are currently there. Like, it's insane, and I feel overwhelmed, and I have kind of a critique and a complaint about Netflix is that, so they canceled Sense8, they canceled The Get Down about a week ago. That was their first show that they canceled after one season. Usually Netflix has given shows 2 seasons. They've been kind of generous. That's kind of have been the rule up to this point. The Get Down, if you haven't watched it or haven't heard about it, is Baz Luhrmann's, like, I think $150 million budgeted show. There was all these issues while filming the first season, so that they actually kind of had to split it up because they weren't finished filming the first season. So there was, like, I think 6 episodes that were released last summer in August, and then there were 7 episodes released in April. And Netflix canceled it because there wasn't enough viewer turnout, and it was just a huge, huge financial thing that they kind of put in. And I think Sense8 has got like that. It's filmed internationally with many different actors around the country, which I think, and around the world, which is great. But I think both for Sense8 and The Get Down, it was just really, really expensive. So maybe this is kind of the first that we're seeing of Netflix kind of getting a sense that they can't just write blank checks anymore. There is a price to it, but it's kind of sad. So, like, House of Cards just launched their 5th season. Orange Is the New Black, like I said, season 5 comes out this month at some point. And they keep renewing those shows, but then they have shows like The Get Down, which, you know, I thought the first 6 episodes of season 1 were okay. And then they have Sense8, and they have Bloodline, and they don't really kind of let those shows wrap up. They just kind of cancel those shows. And I get it. I mean, you're a network, and at one point in time, it's a job and it's a business, and I get that. But I think that the amount of content they're putting out and kind of being more trigger happy in the last couple of years is kind of going to be a problem to Netflix's model that they've established over the last 4 years, which is being really creative and creator friendly. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, so it was kind of sad. And apparently it is, I didn't even notice this. And to people listening, to my queer listeners, I'm really sorry that I didn't even realize that it was the first day of Pride Month. And so Netflix canceled a show that has a lot of queer representation on the first day of Pride Month. So that kind of sucks. So I don't know about you guys, how you feel about the whole Netflix thing. If you feel like myself, where I'm overwhelmed by the amount of content they are putting out, you can, or if you even disagree with me, you can send emails to popfishbowl@gmail.com. So that's kind of what's been going on. The other thing this weekend I'm really excited for, and I'll go into that in my TV segment, is Twin Peaks. I am so excited for Twin Peaks. Basically, all I need this weekend is Wonder Woman, the 5th episode of season 3 of Twin Peaks, and a pie. And I'm kind of set for that weekend. The other thing, very quickly, before I kind of get into more of the episode, is I have some exciting news that I was hoping to reveal on the return of this podcast after basically, you know, a year hiatus. But we're going to have to wait, and I'm so, so sorry, guys. I was really hoping to reveal this, but maybe in the next week, if if I'm so lucky. It's just, again, life, yo. So For books, I am currently reading American Gods by Neil Gaiman. The TV adaptation on Stars started, I think, about 4 weeks ago. I think they're four episodes in. And I don't know about you guys, but I really like sometimes being a snobby book reader. And so I wanted to read the book before I watched the show. And really all that I know about the show is that Ian McShane is playing one of the main characters. I have tried really hard to not be spoiled by even casting announcements on American Gods. I kind of want to go into it and have like fully formed ideas after reading the book, because one of the things I really like when I'm reading a book is to kind of have a mental image, like that mind's eye of what the characters look like, what they sound like, what they smell like, and then to kind of see if the adaptation lines up with set expectations. So that being said, I am 300 pages into American Gods. I've got about 230, 250 pages left to go. I love it. This is the first Neil Gaiman book that I've read. I've watched some of the movies that his books have been based on and adapted from. I love Stardust. I love Coraline, but I've never read any of his books. Really, all I know about Neil Gaiman, other than him writing Coraline and Stardust and now American Gods, was that he was a writer for DC and Vertigo's Sandman in the late 1990s. And the other thing about American Gods is I took a mythology class as part of my English in university, and I had actually bought a copy of American Gods because I'd heard about how it related to mythology and gods, and I'd given it to my prof of that course who had never even heard of it. I was really excited and I wanted to share it with my prof, who I really enjoyed, and he never gave it back to me. So I had to buy American Gods again, and just selfishly, I'm kind of annoyed that I had to buy it again, because not that I mean I don't want to support Neil Gaiman, he's great and that. That being said, I love American Gods thus far. There is something about his prose that is just so delightful and exciting. The characters, even the ones that are minor and minute, feel so real, so fleshed out that I can hear them in my head. I can see them. I can smell them. He just has a way, just with developing the characters, the world building, the dialogue. It is just such a delight. It is kind of like eating a new pie for the first time and just being really excited and happy. That's how I feel, and it's rare that I feel that with books anymore. I don't know if I'm reading the wrong books, but the last book I felt that way about was Steeplejack by A.J. Hartley, which you probably heard in previous podcasts. I loved that book. Honestly, it's one of my favorite YAs just in recent year. I love that book. I have recommended it to as many people as I can. I'm really excited for the second book in the series, Firebrand, that I think comes out in the fall. So yeah, anyways, you should buy American Gods if you haven't already, and you should also buy Steeplejack by A.J. Hartley. It is a YA set in kind of a fantasy Africa, and it has a main character, Aang Satonga, who is a person of color, which is really needed, because sometimes I feel like there's just too many white people. And it's just, again, the world building is incredible. The characters are all really developed. They all feel real. I could not recommend Steeplejack highly enough. So that is for books. For comics, I got Misfits City issue 1. It's a new series by Boom Studios, and it's written by Kiwi Smith and Kurt Lustgarten. It is kind of an homage and a very meta take on the Goonies, the 1985 80s action adventure show. It features a town called Canyon Cove that had a movie called The Gloomies and a musical band that were named after the movie, and there's a history and natural museum And it's very, very Goonies-esque. And the creators, even after the first issue, kind of very lovingly penned a letter just saying how much they loved the Goonies. And so as someone who enjoyed the Goonies and watched it later in life, I wasn't even aware that it really existed until probably like 10 years ago. And someone just said, oh, what did you think of the Goonies? And I'm like, what? It's got Sean Austin in it? Oh, cool. I should watch that. I loved him in Lord of the Rings. Yeah, sorry. It's funny, for all the movies that I watch and all the TV that I watch, there are shows that kind of slip through the proverbial pop culture cracks. But I loved Misfit City. The story is great. The characters are wonderful. They're all very different. And it's kind of a gift, honestly. When a writer can make characters come alive in 22 pages of basically very limited dialogue and very limited story, because you've got art that's kind of juxtaposed. And I have to tip my hand to Kiwi Smith and Kurt Lustgarten, because they did a fantastic job, and I'm very, very excited to read the rest of the series, and I hope it does well. I've loved the stuff from Boom. Just like, aside from Lumberjanes and Giant Days, I love Joyride. I was really sad that Joyride came to an end. I love Goldie Vance. Just Boom is just incredible. So that's Misfit City. I've also been reading the first three issues of a new Ghostbusters series, Ghostbusters 101 by Eric Burnham, and that comes from IDW. Now, you guys may find this funny. I'm a huge Ghostbusters fan. That, with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, are probably my two favorite franchises of all time. Those are the ones that really kind of defined me growing up, and especially even now. And you probably find it funny or maybe odd that I've never really read a Ghostbusters comic before. I haven't. Just to be honest, there's a lot of comics out there, and I had no interest. I had the movies, and I had the cartoons, and I had my childhood memories of the toys, and I was kind of good. So the reason I picked up Ghostbusters 101 is that it is bringing the characters from the 2016 movie Answer the Call, by written and directed by Paul Feig. And if you probably remember, and you haven't been under a rock for the last year, it caused quite a disturbance in the pop culture and geek community. And I just have to say, as a quick aside, big Ghostbusters fan, my issue with the movie was that they just didn't really connect it to the franchise. They kind of tried to kind of overwrite it and do their own take that was really kind of a spoof and homage to Ghostbusters, really. And I think that what they should have done is just had a separate movie that could have utilized those amazing actors, because all of the women in that movie, from Kate McKinnon to Leslie Jones to Melissa McCarthy to Kristen Wiig, were fantastic. They were all great. But they didn't really feel like real characters. It more kind of felt like Paul Feig just kind of turned on the camera and let them improv and ad-lib for 2 hours. So that being said, it was the characters that I thought had a lot of potential. And my biggest beef with the movie, honestly, was Paul Feig and how he interacted with the fan base and the franchise in general. But the characters I thought had a lot of potential. So it excited me that Ghostbusters 101 was basically bringing all the universes of the Ghostbusters franchise, like the universe, the real Ghostbusters, the cartoon, and the universe from the main movie, as well as the universe from Answer the Call, all together. And I have to say, three issues in, Burnham has done an amazing job making not only the characters from the original movie, but the characters from Extreme Ghostbusters. Kylie Griffin appears in the series as well. She's working with the Ghostbusters, to the amazing Ghostbusters in Answer the Call. He has done a really good job of making all of those characters' voices heard, where they all feel like the distinct characters we know and love. And in regards to the Answer the Call Ghostbusters, he takes all the things that made them distinct from that movie, whether you liked it or not, and he makes them more developed. He makes them more feel real, where it's kind of less jokey. Like Kate McKinnon's character Holtzman, for example, is kind of really frantic and kind of kinetic in the comics, but she's also feels more of a person than she did in the movie, if that makes sense. And honestly, my thought of the movie was that it was just okay. It wasn't a horrible movie, and I also didn't really think it was great. It was just kind of okay. It certainly wasn't anywhere near the controversy that kind of led it up to, and I just kind of feel sad for all the parties involved, honestly, because those actors are going to kind of have that blemish on their resume for the rest of time, where people are constantly going to bring it up. They're going to ask some questions about it. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that that movie was made into such an issue when it didn't need to be. So that's Ghostbusters 101. The other comic that I've really been enjoying is Real Science Adventures, which also comes from IDW. Apparently it's a spinoff of the Atomic Robo universe. I really enjoy it. So basically, the first two issues that I've read so far feature kind of continuing stories. One is about a group of all women air pilots in the 40s during World War II, and the other is kind of a spy called the Sparrow, and they're really great. As someone who feels very happy when there's more women in media, I love that we have a story of awesome badass, you know, pilots in the 40s, as well as a spy story. The art is very stylized, I would say. I like and prefer the art for the Sparrow series by Wook Jin Clark. I just find it better than the one for the Hellcats. That one's just kind of more cartoony and like I said, stylized. And some people are either going to like and some people aren't. So that's the comics that I have been reading. Now let's get into TV. So I mentioned Twin Peaks. I was kind of brought into Twin Peaks by two people. I have a friend who told me about it years ago, while it was still on Netflix in Canada. And then I also have another internet friend, my friend Jordan, who kind of told me about it about 2 years ago, like in 2015. And I watched it, and I watched all the first season and most of the second season, and just fell in love with the world of Twin Peaks. It was weird, it was dark, it was funny, it was surreal, it was soapy. And I loved every single second of it. And if you're like me and you fell in love with the world of Twin Peaks and you watched the season 2 finale, the show is canceled in its second season, so the finale aired in 1991, you were probably very upset that there was no resolution to it. And there was no resolution in the follow-up movie, which was Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, that was really a prequel to the last days of Laura Palmer. So I watched that finale and I was just like, I need to find out what happens. And then luckily for me, it was announced that Twin Peaks was coming back, which is one of the main reasons I watched Twin Peaks for the first time, and I got very excited. So basically for the last 2 years, I have been waiting on bated breath for the return of Twin Peaks, you know, because this has never been done before. We've never had a show that has come back 26 years later where the creator had always intended that. We've had a lot of revivals in the last couple years, from X-Files to Prison Break to Will and Grace is coming back, Roseanne is coming back, but a lot of that I don't think was planned and intentional, whereas Twin Peaks was. David Lynch always wanted to do a follow-up to Twin Peaks even after Fire Walk With Me, but at that time television shows coming back were not a thing, so I think he originally planned a movie. And so this is just a way for it to return. And so David Lynch, along with Mark Frost, wrote all 18 episodes together. And then David Lynch, at 71 years old, directed all 18 episodes. And if that doesn't blow your mind even more, most of the original cast, aside from the few people who are now deceased, unfortunately, as well as some people who just didn't want to return for reasons being their own, have all returned. So I can't think of another show or another that has done this. It is unprecedented, especially in the world of peak TV, because the one thing that the Twin Peaks never really had was social media. There was no Twitter, there was no Facebook, there was no Tumblr, there was no Reddit, you know, 26 years ago. So it's kind of cool and very, very exciting. So I frantically tried to watch all of Twin Peaks. I made it through season one and half of season two. I basically made it to episode 12 of the second season before the new episode of Twin Peaks started. Basically, I would have had to miss watching it live, and I didn't want to do that. So the plan was to watch all two seasons as well as the prequel movie Fire Walk With Me, but I didn't make it. Like I said, I made it to season two, episode 12. But I was very excited. Of course, none of my friends, because this is just the story of my life, were as excited as I was. No one really seemed to care. But I had a Twin Peaks party solo. I bought strawberry rhubarb pie, I bought cherry pie, and I bought donuts, and I bought coffee, and I watched the two-hour premiere last Sunday. And if you have watched the two-hour premiere, this is a no spoiler or spoiler-free podcast, but I was very confused yet transfixed at the oddity even surpassing Twin Peaks, and even for David Lynch. And I think it was my own fault, because I kind of expected some kind of resolution, and it basically was David Lynch just saying, this is what I'm doing, you either get on board or you don't. And after the first hour where I screamed WTF at my TV repeatedly, because I didn't understand what was going on and I selfishly wanted the characters back, I really embraced it. And I liked the second hour much more. And then Showtime, which is airing the revival, released episodes 3 and 4 of the new series online. And so I binged that and I loved it, especially by the end of episode 4. I really got into Twin Peaks. So that is Twin Peaks. That honestly, that is really the only TV I care about right now, but I have been watching some stuff. I finished season 5 of The Americans the other day. Didn't really like it. I got into The Americans last year. I kind of binged seasons 1 to 4 and loved it. And then felt bad that I had been depriving myself of this amazing TV show. And I have to say, I don't know, again, if it was just my expectations or not, but I didn't enjoy season 5 of The Americans. I found it very slow. I found it boring and tedious at times. And I was just overall disappointed. I've been watching iZombie. I've been watching the new season of Fargo. Fargo, if you're not aware, is an anthology, so every season is different. And I've really felt that... that with the second season, they really upped their game. That was probably my favorite of the season. Season 3 features Ewan McGregor playing two twin brothers. It also features Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Michael Stuhlbarg, who was in the Coen brothers' A Serious Man from, oh wow, it's gotta be almost 10 years ago, 9 years ago? I think it came out in 2008, but don't quote me. So I've watched 6 episodes of the new season of Fargo. I've really enjoyed it. I've been trying to finish TV the last month. My goal for June, it's June 1st, so my goal for June, and hold me to this, is to just get through shows. I'll tell you, I've got a list of TV, and these are the shows that I haven't finished yet. I haven't finished Horace and Pete from last year. I've got 8 episodes left on that. I haven't finished Roadies. I've got 9 episodes. I've only seen the pilot of Roadies, and Roadies has since been canceled. I haven't watched, I've only watched 1 episode of TBS's Wrecked, which is a Lost parody that seemed to have come 10 years later that wasn't needed. I still have 2 seasons left of Penny Dreadful, 6 episodes of HBO's Vice Principals with Danny McBride. 4 seasons left of Gilmore Girls. I've got 8 episodes left of the first season of The Man in the High Castle. 7 episodes left of the first season of Lemony Snicket. 5 episodes of a Canadian drama on CBC called Pure that is about the Amish crime ring. Yes, apparently there's crime rings in the Amish community. I've got 3 episodes left of National Geographic's Mars. 7 episodes of the first season of Feud with Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon. 7 episodes of another Canadian drama featuring Anna Paquin called Bellevue. That was also on CBC. I've got 12 episodes left of Netflix's 13 Reasons Why. And 4 episodes left of the revival of Prison Break. So my plan is to make it through the shows that I've started without starting any new shows. That is my plan. I'm even going to avoid watching Kimmy Schmidt and Grace and Frankie and even Orange is the New Black season 5 that I really, really want to see until I've cleared some of this TV because it's just ridiculous. I just need to finish it. So my plan tonight is to actually watch the last 3 episodes of Mars, watch the last 4 episodes of Prison Break, and then catch on to I'm probably going to go through Feud and Pier and Bellevue and try to get those done. So that is the TV that I've been watching. I wanted to save this kind of for its own segment. So I don't know if I mentioned, I love ghost shows. I love ghost stories. I love legends. I love myths. One of the things about having free cable the last couple months that's been really fun is I've been exposed to this Canadian channel called Travel and Escape. And oddly enough, the programs on the Travel and Escape network are basically all the paranormal shows. So you've got Paranormal Witness, Paranormal Survivor, you've got Paranormal State, you've got Ghost Hunters, you've got all these crazy shows. Another show that they have just started airing is called National Park Secrets and Legends. Or if you're in the States, it's Mysteries at the National Parks. This one's really interesting. Apparently, it's the same production company, and it's the same show. But in the States, the first season was marketed as Mysteries at the National Parks. It wasn't renewed for a second season in the States. But they did a second season in Canada, and it's called National Parks Secrets and Legends. So I'll be recording this show, and one episode will be called National Park Secrets and Legend, and the other will be called Mysteries of the National Parks. But it seems to be the same show and the same production company. I have to tell you guys, I have been loving this show. The first episode I watched featured the Lassen Volcanic National Park in California, and there is a race of lizard people living underneath the cavern system in a hollow earth scenario. Yes, I heard that right. You are not on drugs. That is exactly what I said. And I love it. So the story went that, or the story goes, I should say, that in this park, there was a bunch of campers and they were trying to find a place to camp for the night. And they saw a cavern system and they thought, well, this is great. We'll go in the caves. And once they go in the caves, they realize that the caves actually extend a lot further back than they had initially expected. So they're kind of going back and they're just exploring now. And then while exploring, they kind of see a light like far off in the distance. And they're thinking, well, that's interesting. What is this light? Is it a lantern? Like, I don't understand. So they follow the light for probably 20 to 30 minutes. And the trail ends with 3 men, and they were only described as being kind of dressed in like minor clothing or very basic, like khaki and white shirt, kind of ensemble, white men, and they're holding a flashlight. The flashlight was actually what looked to be a light, far off in the distance. And the 3 men approach the campers and they say, "What are you doing here? And are you from the surface?" And the 3 men just say, "Well, we're just looking for a place to camp." And they say, and then the 3 strange men say, "No, you need to leave. That you are not allowed." And they kind of force them out of the cave. And apparently, these 3 men are part of a race of reptile creatures that exist underneath the earth, and they can camouflage themselves as humans when they need to. I was just captured by this story. by this new myth, this new legend that I've heard about. I was just totally transfixed by it. So, of course, I'm watching subsequent episodes. In the Mark Twain National Park, and forgive me, guys, I'm just a Canadian. I think it's in Missouri, but don't quote me on that one. They have the following, and again, it's just in the one park. They have a hellhound that'll chase drivers if they get lost or stuck in a certain area. There is supposedly a witch that was buried in the park, and she was buried in the park because she was a witch, and she had she was known to kind of be in witchcraft, and so they buried her outside of the city cemetery where the other town residents were buried. So they buried her way off in the forest, and apparently her spirit haunts the grave and has left a curse by the grave and by the area that was also kind of her resident. She lived in that area back in the day, and there's a demon that guards her grave. And if you approach the grave, you will see this kind of odd figure with glowing red eyes, and it's a demon, and you do not want to approach. I can only assume that you meet certain death if you approach. It wasn't really clear in the legends. Usually, as legends go, what would happen to you? So there's hellhounds. There's this witch. There was a Haitian slave that was also believed to be a witch. So when she died, they cut up her body into pieces and scattered them throughout the Mark Twain National Forest. And again, as legend goes, her body is trying to slowly reassemble the limbs and the appendages so she can resurrect herself and, you know, come back as a witch and control the world, as you do, right? So that's just one park. There's also a legend that there is a hall of records that exists in the park. There's an area called the Missouri Mystery Mound that supposedly has a hall of records containing ancient artifacts from anything from Roman and Greek times to biblical times to even Atlantean times. And it's all held in this cavern, and it's just kind of, it's like a depository. And there's a man who's been searching for this Hall of Records ever since he heard the legend. He believes he's found it in the Missouri Mystery Mound, but every time he has approached that area, even in the general vicinity, he is stopped by a government man with high-powered rifles. So that's just one park, and I love that. So I'm going to leave you with one more story. In the Grand Canyon National Park, there was an air disaster in the 70s. Two planes collided with each other because the air traffic controller wasn't on the job. It wasn't really clear why the collision occurred, but it did. Everyone died in the crash. The parts were scattered throughout parts of the Grand Canyon. And this is when it gets interesting. One of the park rangers was camping in a secluded area that a lot of visitors aren't allowed to go in. And she was awoken early in the morning by footsteps and by voices. And she was really kind of confused because this is a very secluded area. People shouldn't be there. So she kind of has to do her job as a park ranger. So she gets out of the tent, and she's surprised to see men and women dressed in 50s attire, so long skirts and suits and tie jacket, and you've got the 50s horn-rimmed glasses and the short cropped hair for the men, and they're walking up towards a ravine. Now, as again, the legend goes, those were the victims of the plane, of the two airlines that crashed. And it gets better. It gets even more interesting. And honestly, this has probably become one of my favorite ghost stories. One of the airlines, to save costs, took some of the parts from the wreckage and reused them in other planes that they owned. Now, later on, the flight crews of those same airlines would see the first officer or the captain or the co-captain or some of their stewardesses while they were making their rounds. They were on the flight, and they were really concerned because, to the best of their knowledge, those people were dead. So why are they there? And apparently it was such a cause of concern. And again, over several different airlines, so I can only guesstimate 3 to 4 at least. It was such a cause of concern that the airline did an investigation. They took out all the parts that were from the wreckage. They bought new parts, and supposedly after several months, the activity decreased, and then it slowly just went away. But I think that is one of the coolest ghost stories I've ever heard. So, in summation, Ezekiel loves National Park Secrets and Legends, or Mysteries at the National Parks. In the States, I think it was on the Travel Channel. I don't know if it's on Amazon or Hulu or even Netflix US, but if it is, and you're like me and you love this stuff, I would definitely check it out. Lastly, but not least, for video games, over the last 2 months, I have played Thimbleweed Park. I was really excited about it because the designers of the game made some of my favorite adventure games that I played as a child. I wasn't allowed to have like consoles, so I didn't have like a Nintendo or a Genesis or a PlayStation. None of that. It wasn't allowed. So I played a lot of computer games, and specifically adventure games, and I loved all the characters that were created and the world building. It just, as a writer and as a child, I really gravitated towards that. So obviously I was excited when they had kind of returned, and their whole thing was they were going to do kind of like a what if. Like, what if we made a game in the 80s, but it was just kind of like lost in the shuffle and kind of forgotten about. So it's basically an 80s game that was made in 2017. The graphics are all pixelated. There's voiceovers because, you know, it's 2017, so you're not just going to have text. But it's very much an homage to the games that they themselves designed, but were also kind of in the video game zeitgeist of the 80s. So I passed the easy mode back in late March when the game came out. It took me 2 months to pass the hard mode because I was really stubborn and I didn't want hints. And then finally I just broke down and got hints because I wanted to pass the game so I could do a review. So that was Thimbleweed Park. That kind of wraps it up for me. I'm really excited. I hope I get to see Wonder Woman tomorrow. I'm really excited for Twin Peaks Episode 5. Let me know if there's anything you want me to discuss or something I missed out at popfishbowl@gmail.com. Thank you guys so much. I'll see you next week.